Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass. And we welcome you to Monday, November 27th in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. We're so delighted that Green Things has the naming rights to our studio on the Bustos Media campus here in Tucson, where we have now five radio stations under one roof, including our newest acquisition, The Drive. But this station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's source for trusted local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Not only can you listen to the program live, but thanks to Rosemary Brandt, my longtime assistant, Rose gets the programs posted to the website, so the podcasts are there forever. I mean, we've been doing the radio show for almost 13 full years, and we've got just about every show we've done archived there at buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On Monday, we kick off the week with our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe and his family specialize in custom frame mirrors. I'm fortunate enough to have two of those custom frame mirrors in our home. Moe is a fantastic photographer. He's got his work up on the walls at the gallery. And of course, where they really excel, the picture framing, and then Moe does the hanging services and hanging systems, which means if you don't want to put it up on the wall, let a pro come out to the house, do all the measuring, and Moe makes sure it's exactly where you want it in your home. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. All right, this week's one-on-one interview is with Patrick Cunningham, a professional grief educator who has worked as a hospice bereavement coordinator and grief and loss specialist over the past four decades and has helped thousands of people and families navigate really the uncharted waters of grief. Patty has a master's degree in divinity from Northwestern University. He walks the talk. He lost his father unexpectedly when he was 17 years old, and a decade later his mom died on Christmas Day. And Patty, who bears a remarkable resemblance to old Saint Nick himself, is one of Southern Arizona's most sought-after Santa Claus. In fact, a couple of years ago, he was named by the Professional Santa Organization as the number one Santa in America. Patrick Sheraton, great to have you with us.
Great to be here, Bill.
You know, you have said, and you're a very prolific Facebook poster, and for that, I thank you very much. You put up a bunch of posts almost daily about this topic of grief, and I know it's helped me very much on my journey, and I've been very open about what has happened in my life, and really my grief started 6 months ago or so when Anne got the terrible news that you have terminal cancer and you're going to die. But what you post has been very helpful. And one of the posts recently said, grief is like a fingerprint. There are no two ways of grieving will be the same.
Well, that's absolutely true. You know, people have ideas about what grief, quote, should look like, and it never looks like that. And my grief will never look like your grief. And nobody's grief looks like anybody else's grief because it's unique to you. And even if you and your sister both lose your mother, mm-hmm. it would, to some, might appear that it was, well, it's the same grief. You just both lost your mom. But I have a different and unique relationship with my mother than my sister has. And that's true across the board with families. And of course, there are some that don't speak to their grief, don't articulate it, it doesn't appear that they're grieving.
And they bury it.
They bury it. And
which is not uncommon. I kind of went the other way. I got on the radio and talked about it. And I think it's been very helpful.
It has to have helped. And particularly because grief, unfortunately, we're a grief illiterate society.
Yeah.
And we just don't talk about it. We don't want to talk about it. We don't know how to talk about it. We don't know what to say.
Why does it scare people so much?
It's so natural. I think in part, I mean, there are probably many levels of why, but in part, most of us want to avoid the fact that the hourglass, our personal hourglass, is the sands going through it, and
yeah,
we have a minute or two or an hour or two or a day, a month, a year, we don't know, but that we're going to die, and it's hard to face your own mortality, and particularly if you're contemplative at all and say, well, in light of that fact, what in the world am I going to do with the rest of my life?
That's right. You know, I was thinking about, so no two grief experiences, no two paths walking these uncharted path are going to be the same. So that presents for you as a grief counselor, a bereavement counselor, a particular challenge on how you approach what you do.
Well, to some extent, that's correct. But I've learned over the years that because we're each so unique and we process grief so differently from anybody else in the world or anyone who's ever been in the world, is that to be able to just breathe in and breathe out and relax and not assume anything. I've been immersed in grief, my own grief and grief stories for close to 40 years, as you said, and I still don't assume anything. I don't assume that I know unless a person who's grieving tells me that that's how it is for him or her, because until they identify it, before they tell me, I don't know. And so to be able to be a witness, because in this time of year and all times, every day of the year, every year, people, you're standing in line at the grocery store.
Yeah.
And you look normal, presumably.
Yes.
And everyone around you looks normal,
yes,
too. But they don't know the brokenness in your heart. They don't know your pain, your grief, your loss. And how could they? Because, you know, the grocery store is not the opportunity to probably unload that sadness. So you contain it. But then you shift over to, you know, more personal than a grocery store, but a neighborhood holiday party.
Yes.
And you go into the party, maybe reluctantly, certainly with reservations. And sure enough, you were probably right to have some reservations, because everyone at that party knows that you've just lost the person you love. Mm-hmm. And do they ask about that? Do they acknowledge it? Do they avert their eyes? Do they go into the kitchen when you're in the living room, or
it's like you got the plague.
You've got the grief plague.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the sense of loneliness and isolation gets magnified, because all of a sudden, not only are you lonelier, you may be lonelier or feeling lonelier, but it almost feels like not only is your loved one who passed away, who died, I think it's important to say the word died,
mm-hmm,
but is a ghost, but so are you, and you're still here. You're still alive, and you're right there in the room. You're right there at the party, and it's almost like you died too.
Yeah. When we come back with our Monday one-on-one with Patrick Sheridan, we're going to talk a little about hospice. Patrick, there's so much confusion still to this day about what hospice is. We'll talk a little bit about that with Patrick Sheridan as we continue with our Monday one-on-one, which is presented by our friends at Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing. And, of course, their website now, mohsgallery.com, looking very good. They've revamped it, and they're doing some e-commerce there as well. And, of course, we also want to talk about our favorite bakery in town. Patrick, I'll tell you, everybody needs comfort food, especially this time of year. Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle. So is that going to make you feel like you might want to go up to Mona's?
You're making me hungry.
There you go.
Can we shorten the interview?
Okay.
I need to get up
there. All right.
There.
Get up to Mona's, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, and monasdanishbakery.com is their website. I didn't get the exact count of how many pies Steve and the team prepared for Thanksgiving. They were shooting for 600. I'm sure they hit that because they were extremely busy. And I know I had my... At our Thanksgiving potluck at the Buckmaster Bungalow, we had our dinner rolls, which were a big hit from Mona's Danish Bakery. Our Monday one-on-one with Patrick Sheridan continues right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Family-owned and run since 1985, Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at mohsgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It is our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. We're talking with Patrick Sheraton, a professional grief educator. And it's actually Patrick Sheridan Cunningham. Patrick Cunningham, professional grief educator who has worked as a hospice bereavement coordinator and a grief and loss specialist over the past four decades. You worked in hospice early on, kind of when hospice was, I don't know, it became more and more fashionable. People are confused. What is hospice, Patrick?
Hospice is care that is multidisciplinary. So you've got a doctor, a nurse, social worker, volunteers, administrators, chaplains, all working together for the patient's benefit. And even after all these years of hospice being around, being introduced, and just having people be educated about it.
And the concept, though, goes back to the Middle Ages, but it just became more fashionable after World War II, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Well, in the Middle Ages, you know, people would be on religious pilgrimages,
yeah,
and inevitably there'd be a house along the way, like a safe house that people could rest. And sometimes they came into those homes really sick and terminal, and they died there, but they were cared for by the people in those homes and in those safe places. And then it was sort of remarkably revived in a way. I don't even know if the right word is revived, but in England, by Dame Cicely Saunders, who began the idea of hospice in England. And then it first came over here, very close to Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. And then Tucson actually is the home to the second hospice.
Oh, really?
In the United States, yes.
I want to talk a little bit about people think hospice, you go in one day and then you die the next. That's not typical, is it?
Couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, some people do.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, in hospice, you have to have two physicians who agree that given the course of the disease or the illness, that probably, and no one but God knows this stuff, right? But probably, if the disease follows its course, a person will die within 6 months or less. But I've had many, many patients over the years that have lived far beyond 6 months. They continue to be reevaluated, and if they're still appropriate for hospice care. And occasionally we have a person, quote, graduate from hospice that they're doing well enough to not need hospice anymore. But sometimes a person will come in, typically a person or family situation, because it's hard. It's hard, hard stuff. They wait too long to enroll in hospice care. And what happens as a result is all their needs, like to have an RN come into your home and be there instead of having to travel or sit in a doctor's office or something that nobody wants to do, and to have CNAs come in to bathe and to help in other ways. It just, it relieves the family on so much of the details that they're worried about, so they can focus on the only detail that really is important, and that's their loved one.
Let's talk a little bit about getting, people say, if you've been grieving for a few months, time to get over it, Patrick. They say it's time to move on.
Well, when I hear that, I always have to hold down my hands and resist the urge to strangle whoever has said that, because that, you know, you don't get over it. As Bill, you mentioned that my first real experience with death was as a 17-year-old. I was going into my senior year of high school, and my father died of a massive heart attack. And none of my classmates, I had 350 in my graduating class. I mean, nobody had lost a parent, and nobody knew how to talk to me about it. But it's like the isolation that can happen for people who are grieving, it's just, it can be such a lonely experience unless you really enlist the people who are willing to lend their heart and their ear to you and not try and fix you. Because you don't get over the death of someone you love. You do not. So the love I had for my father when he died at age 17, right now, I spend, especially during the holidays, I spend some significant time missing him and all that might have been, could have been, our history. Oh, I'd love to pick his brain now. That's a thing associated with grief. And so, you know, we don't get over it, nor should we, because we don't get over loving them. I mean, is there a time you're going to not love Anne?
No.
Is there a time that I'm not going to love my mom, my dad,
no,
my grandparents,
no,
my favorite dogs? No. And
that's the thing we haven't talked about. It doesn't have to just be the law, just. It doesn't have to be like a catastrophic loss of a spouse. We could be talking about a mother, a father, a favorite cousin, a brother, sister, a pet. It's all grief.
It's all grief. And it's very much also associated with gratitude. Not only do we love people, but we're grateful for them. And hopefully we're grateful and express that before they die. But if we haven't, or at least not as much as we would have liked to, we sure as heck are grateful for them after they're gone and realize even more the impact that they have had on our lives and how they pointed us toward things that matter, like kindness.
We're speaking with Patrick Cunningham Sheridan, Patty Sheridan, who, as I mentioned in the introduction, is a very sought-after gentleman this time of year, especially because of his role as Santa. It's interesting that, Christmas, which you shared with me, had always been your favorite holiday. Then you had tragedy with your mother dying, and it was several Christmases. You just started like, I can't go through this. You dreaded it. So you turned to Santa Claus, and look what happened.
Look what happened. I don't know if I turned toward Santa or Santa turned to you.
Turned to me.
I had spoken to my mother the Christmas Eve before she died, and was living out of town at the time and was joyfully planning our family trip down to spend the Christmas Day and some of the holiday with my mother. And then lo and behold, she was dead the next day. And one of the most traumatic experiences for me, because I'm very careful and always have been about selecting the very right gift for the very right person. I don't just go into Walgreens at the end of the day and buy a box of chocolate. I really take considerable care in planning the gifts for the people in my life. And so I had many gifts from my mother. And after she died, it took me months. And I'll tell you why, because each gift I opened, I sobbed and sobbed, and I couldn't stop sobbing. It was uncontrollable, sobbing and grief. And so finally, after about a year, I had opened all the gifts, and then I didn't know what to do with them, so I donated them. But still, it was a hard thing. And then the following Christmas was just nearly as difficult. And so Christmas had always been one of my favorite holidays. And so I said, I've got to do something to redeem this day. Maybe I could do something, I didn't know what, in honor of my mother. And turns out there was I was volunteering and making some meals for the Ronald McDonald House, and they told me a story about the children who were the brothers and sisters of kids in the hospital who were very sad, very upset at not being able to visit Santa Claus while their parents were away attending to their sibling. And so I thought, a light bulb went on, and I thought, I've got the physique of Santa. I don't have the
you look like Santa.
I don't have the beard yet. But I wonder how that would look.
Beard and now. So it looks great.
So I grew that beard out in the very following Christmas season, holiday season. I was the Ronald McDonald's Santa Claus, and it brought me great joy, and it helped to begin to have my mother's death be something that was redemptive, something I could carry and give people some joy and hope. And it meant the world to them, but it also meant the world to me.
What's a, what are the characteristics of a good Santa? And we're just about out of time, Patrick.
The same characteristics that make me a very good hospice chaplain, which are complete attention to the person who's right in front of you. There are no distractions. You're not taking texts. You're not issuing texts. You're not doing anything except being a witness to what they have to say to you. Being a witness is part of how to tend to people who are grieving. So you're paying attention without distracting. You're listening without judgment at all. No judgment at all. You're just listening with understanding where they're coming from. And somebody will, you know, some child will want an expensive iPad, and another child will come to you with a simple request for socks. And you listen to both of them, and you embrace both of them, and hear their needs.
All right, Patrick, thank you very much. Patrick Sheraton, Patrick Cunningham Sheraton. You can find him on Facebook. He's always welcoming new friends, and be very valuable, I think, for people to follow you on Facebook. And only a few quick seconds. Any other way to get a hold of you, Patty?
You could if you want to, but you got to put in the subject line grief. If you don't put in the subject line,
gotta go.
Grief.
All right. Thank you so much.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zilcalo Village Studio. We love green things, especially this time of year. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. I have mentioned, and I did last week leading up to Thanksgiving, poinsettias were, we've got a couple of them from Green Things that really added to the holiday feel on our Thanksgiving potluck at the Buckmaster Bungalow, which went very well. Very good. Had about 10 people. And the poinsettias, and we had a centerpiece also from Green Things of a Christmas cactus, which had all sorts of beautiful pink flowers. So that was kind of new to me, but I'm told the Christmas cactus will kind of bloom for a while, and then they go away, and then they'll bloom again maybe next November, and we'll see. Anyway, Green Things, 13-acre site, home also to Zocalo, which all Zocalo Village, all the beautiful Christmas items from Mexico. Those tin Christmas trees are pretty cool. And, of course, all the Talavera pottery. So check it out. Very much in the holiday spirit over at Green Things. When we do our telephone interviews, of which we will do one in a moment here, that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Matt Hines is the District 2 Pima County Supervisor. Dr. Hines is out of the country. David Higuera, the Chief of Staff of District 2, is going to be filling in for Dr. Hines, and David's with us now on the live line. Hey, David, how are you?
Hi, Bill. I'm well. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for being with us. I wanted to talk to Matt about Houston's Proposition B. Matt had a Tucson opinion piece the city elections, and Matt was talking about what went on in Houston, about kind of talking about the representation, the voting structure within what happened in Houston and Harris County. And Matt was suggesting that maybe Tucson could take a lesson from what happened there. Could you go into that a little bit for us, David?
Yeah. Well, you know, the Houston area's planning organization, federally recognized regional planning organization, similar to our PAG, has done voting as one jurisdiction, one vote for a long time, just like we have here, one jurisdiction, one vote, whether you're Tucson or South Tucson or Oro Valley or the Tonopah Nation. And the problem with that, of course, is that it's very unrepresentative of the population insofar as, you know, Tucson is 52-53% of the population. Unincorporated Pima County accounts for 34-35% of the population. And yet our votes on that PAG regional council are just 1 out of 9 and are weighted 1 out of 9. So the same was true in Houston. The voters decided to take matters into their own hands. They put a proposition on the ballot. It passed easily. And it basically says going forward that voting on their regional government body should be proportional. The city of Houston should have more of a say based on the size of its population. So should other cities and towns in the area. Supervisor Hines thinks that's a good idea. He was advocating this back in 2021, along with Mayor Romero. When you're talking about how we plan for and expend hundreds of millions of dollars over 20 years, it's really important that people's voices are fairly represented, and that you don't end up with a situation where the vast majority are being held to the whim of a small minority, basically.
Well, this op-ed caused quite a stir among other elected officials, some of whom I have interviewed in the days since Matt put out that editorial. And they contend that the number of road projects, say, with the RTA, is weighted toward the most populous areas. What would you and Dr. Hines say to that, David Higuera?
the basic challenge is that if you look back to the beginning of this process for RTNX, which now goes back almost 6 years, you had the city of Tucson and Pima County saying, hey, we need to be looking at the big picture and not just road projects. Road projects are a piece of the picture, but they're not the majority or the most important piece necessarily. And we have a whole huge number of people in our community who need safer roads, who need better and more reliable and more frequent public transit, who need, you know, we need to be able to expend some funds doing maintenance on previous RTA road projects so that those don't end up coming out of general funds of cities and towns going forward. So it's really just sort of the overall framework for how the discussion was to be had. And unfortunately, you know, the mayor wasn't able to get majority support for this back in 2021. And so the conversation has proceeded very much along the lines of how it did in 2005 and 6 before the original RTA. And it just, you know, it's crowded out the opportunity to have bigger, more thoughtful conversations about investment in transportation and mobility, not just investment in roads. You know, the city has a very clear climate action plan. The county is really getting more aggressive on our climate work as well. And one of the things that is very clear is we're just shooting ourselves in the foot with every new mile of roadway that we build out into the outstretches of the greater community, instead of investing in things like transit that would get more people using public transit and would help out in terms of our long-term climate goals as well.
Is that what you and your team at District 2 would hold out for in the RTA Next program, a program that is heavily weighted toward mass transit and those particular issues, David Higuera?
I mean, it's really clear. In our district, we have a lot of people who rely on public transportation to get to work, for their children to get to school, to get to the grocery store, et cetera. And right now, under the status quo of how the voting system works at PAG, our voters are really subsidizing new, beautiful, brand new road infrastructure in the outskirts. And at the same time, don't have adequate bus service in their neighborhoods and bus service to get them to jobs and schools. So that's a problem. That's a real problem. And that's one of the reasons Matt has been really forcefully saying for years now that the voting structure needs to fundamentally account for, equity and the fact that, the majority of voters should be heard and shouldn't have their voices stifled based on sort of an archaic voting structure that says if you're a town of 5,000 or 10,000 or you're a city of 550,000 or an unincorporated area of more than 100,000, you know, you have the same vote.
Speaking with David Higuera, David is the chief of staff for Dr. Matt Hines. Dr. Hines, Democrat from Supervisorial District. I love saying that word. Supervisorial District number 2. All right. Let's move on to really a big pending issue, David, and that is the resignation of Sharon Bronson. Mm-hmm. And Sharon created, as we know, there were a lot of firsts on the board during her mm-hmm. her tenure, which goes back, I think, 1997, that right. Sharon first was elected. So now the board, Dr. Hines and his colleagues, four other colleagues on the board, have a decision, David, whether do we put a placeholder in the position, Sharon's position, as someone who is not looking at running in 2024, or do we just select the best candidate and a person who may have aspirations to run for that seat, Sharon's seat, in next year, 2024? Some of your thoughts, please, David.
Well, first, just to reiterate what Supervisor Hines said when the news first broke, we're all grateful for Supervisor Bronson's many years of service to the community. She was absolutely a trailblazer. She was integrally involved in the creation of the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan during her first term, which is a huge, I think, part of her legacy that we all benefit from and our community will benefit from forever. So Supervisor Hines has said publicly, and he's made it clear to our staff, that he is going to consider any and all qualified applicants to fill the position at D3, and he doesn't think it's appropriate or right to ask them to only, you know, to make some kind of commitment that they'll only serve for 1 year. He wants to interview and talk to anybody who would be a good candidate to serve the constituents of D3 and the constituents of Pima County, regardless of whether they plan to run for their own term outright in 2024. He just wants to get the best candidate, and this is part of the job of the supervisors as laid out in state law when a vacancy happens.
The vetting process, we had Adelita Grijalva, the chairwoman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, with us Thanksgiving Eve last Wednesday. And she was talking about the meeting on Tuesday, and Adelita had come up with this kind of a checklist or a list of questions for potential candidates. And she felt that this would kind of speed things along in the vetting process. Did Dr. Hines take a position on that proposal?
Yeah, Supervisor Hines generally supported the idea of a questionnaire just for the same reasons that Chair Grijalva mentioned at the dais, which is you never know how many people are going to apply. It might be more than 10 qualified applicants come December 1st when the deadline comes, and this would be one more piece of data that the supervisors would have had to be able to understand where people are coming from. And these are pretty benign questions. What do you think is the image of Pima County, and how would you work to improve perceptions around the role of the county? What's the biggest challenges facing the county? How do you implement ideas for new projects or services? I mean, how do you evaluate ideas for new projects or services? These are the kinds of things you would expect candidates to answer on any campaign trail. So it's unfortunate that it kind of got sidetracked with accusations that there was backroom dealing going on. My understanding is there's simply an attempt between the chair and the county administrator, and I think in talking with others about what would a questionnaire look like that would help us really, you know, get some more information from folks on paper, because it is going to be a fairly quick turnaround. The board is looking to make their appointment December 19th, so that District 3 residents are adequately represented.
Yeah, and there was some talk about a forum. And if you have, like, more than 10 candidates, take it from me after hosting on TV. I remember when Congressman Grijalva's first run for United States Congress representative, I was hosting the debate that Raul, and there were, I think, 10, maybe even 12 candidates, and I was told you've got 1 hour and everybody got 2 minutes to talk, and
right.
That's it. That didn't, that, I don't think that...
Chair Grijalva said as much on Tuesday, last Tuesday on the dais. If there's 10 or 12 or 14 candidates and the League of Women Voters wants to do a forum, it's not going to be a very informative forum when everybody gets 3.5 minutes. So I think what I understood from the board's action last Tuesday is they will evaluate at their December 5th meeting, because by then they'll know exactly who applied and how many people applied. And at that point, they'll either ask for a forum or they won't. I know the League of Women Voters is ready to host one, but I think everybody's interested in it being a meaningful exercise if it's going to happen at all, so that the voters can actually learn something from it.
Have you heard how many people have applied so far?
No idea. No idea.
I would.
We'll know after December 1st when the clerk of the board will announce these are all the applicants, and I think there'll be an initial vetting just on the paper side from the clerk's office. Do they in fact live in the district? Do they meet these basic requirements as laid out by the board? 18 years of age or older, resident of the district, an elector of the district, literate in English, and also a registered Democrat as stipulated in state law when replacing a Democrat.
Okay, David, we've got one more segment with you. We'll take a break right here, and we'll touch base with you after the break. Thank you. Let's take a break. It's Buckmaster on a Monday afternoon. We will be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International. International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
This is John Trout. Catch me every weekday morning at 5 before Wake Up Tucson with America in the Morning. Breaking news, weather, politics, and sports on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Hoping everybody had a delightful four-day Thanksgiving weekend. We are back at it as we are ready this week to close out November and then welcome in December 2023. Be a good time to take a little road trip. It's always a good time to go over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It's only about a three-hour drive. They are ready for the holidays in Silver City. Something different, perhaps, for you. A lot of Tucson residents have never ever been over there. Maybe they heard about it. Me talking about it here on the show, we send a lot of our listeners over there, and everybody I've talked to that comes back saying we had a great time. For more things to do, like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness or just hanging out in historic Silver City, visit their website, southwestnewmexico.org. We're speaking with David Higuera, the Chief of Staff for District 2 Pima County Supervisor Democrat Dr. Matt Hines, who is out of the country at this point. So David has gracefully stepped in for us, and we continue our conversation. Now, I think it was at the last meeting, David, that there was a demonstration outside the supervisor's chambers, a group that believes that Pima County should not spend any more money, certainly not building a new jail, but maybe if they do spend money, it should go to other things rather than corrections. Some of your thoughts on that, David Higuera.
I think the community has a lot of really important and valid concerns. And, you know, state law mandates that we operate a jail in terms of a necessary part of the criminal justice system. However, how we operate that jail and what we do to prevent people from ending up in jail in the first place is a matter of policy, is a matter of priorities. And so one of the biggest arguments that folks in that community who are saying, no, don't do this, are saying is, you know, if you just look at the last 20 years and you see that the jail population has increased, that does not mean that we should be assuming at all that the jail population will continue to increase for the next 20 years, which is unfortunately, I think, one of the assumptions that currently the Sheriff's Department is making. So Supervisor Hines is evaluating this very closely. He's listening to the constituents very closely. And, you know, what we're after is how do we actually end up with a safer, more resilient community where we're actually preventing people from getting involved in the criminal justice system in the first place. And also, you know, there's lots of players involved. It's not just the sheriff. You have the courts playing a major role. You have the county attorney playing a major role in terms of what cases are brought. And you have judges who play a huge role in terms of that initial appearance that by law happens within the first 24 hours of arrest, that where the judge decides, you know, does this person, do I release them on their own recognizance and they show up to their court date, or do I need to impose a bail, a bond, in which case for a lot of people, they just can't pay it. And that's a sentence to jail, essentially, at that point. We have a lot of people in our jail currently who are there pre-trial. They have not been convicted of anything, but they're there because they couldn't post bail. And I think that's a huge problem. And Supervisor Hines is interested in looking at all our alternatives for how we safely and effectively reduce our jail population, as we did very effectively in the first few months of COVID. Without any sort of increase in danger to the community, we were able to reduce our jail population safely and thoughtfully because all the partners were at the table and everybody was collaborating because everybody understood the emergent situation of we have too many people in this tight space. It's an airborne illness. And lo and behold, you know, 500, 600 people were safely released back into the community and monitored safely in the community and able to make their court dates. So I think there's a lot of reason to hope that we can do things differently, and we certainly do not need to be incarcerating more people.
The commission that was established, a blue ribbon commission, if you will, has been meeting several times now. Have we heard when they're ready to make a recommendation to Dr. Hines and the other four supervisors?
We've just heard from the county administrator that that report, you know, the commission is finalizing their report and it should be final soon. We expect it very soon, I would imagine. And again, the commission had a very, very narrow mandate, which was, you know, because the sheriff had come to the board a year and a half ago saying, I need a new jail. I need a new jail yesterday. I need you guys to vote to send a bond to the voters to build a new jail. And that wasn't going to happen. But what could happen in the interim was at least seating this commission that looks at, is that accurate? Do the physical plant problems at the jail facility merit or mandate a new facility, or do they simply mandate better maintenance and preventive maintenance on an ongoing basis? That was the narrow mandate of this commission. They were never actually looking at the broader picture of, do we incarcerate more people? Are we okay with that assumption? Or do we incarcerate fewer people as we, you know, how do these things play into this debate? They were really looking at just the issues of the physical plant. So the bigger issues remain, and they were not part of the charge of the Blue Ribbon Commission.
I think it's worth pointing out, David, that parts of the jail are less than 20 years old. I think a part is over 40, and then there's part that's, I want to say, 17 years old, which wouldn't seem like, doesn't seem to me it's that old.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, you know, Supervisor Hines and a couple of us on his staff toured the jail, I don't know, 8 or 9 months ago with the sheriff and his team. And it does look like, as far as physical plant issues that the sheriff pointed out, the vast majority of them are in that oldest part of the building, you know, which was built, I think, in 1985. So, the newer parts don't show nearly the wear and tear that the older facility has. But, you know, I think this is also part of a larger conversation. You know, one of the biggest things that's coming up on the December 5th board agenda is the year-long work now of the Prosperity Initiative, which has been headed up by Bonnie Bezada and Nicole Fife from Pima County, and a potential new policy for board adoption, the Board of Supervisors Policy 36.2, which would be reducing generational poverty and improving individual and community wealth. And just real quickly for your listeners, I think this is a pretty momentous moment for the county. The purpose of this new policy is to establish an evidence-based policy framework to guide long-term efforts to strategically address intergenerational poverty, improve individual opportunity, and create community wealth, while also tactically addressing the immediate needs of those currently experiencing poverty. And it's a list of proposed policies that the board can adopt, from increasing the supply of housing, including supply in all neighborhoods of affordable housing, to improving housing stability for renters and homeowners, to investing in both physical and social infrastructure in low-income communities, to helping make sure that everybody in our community enrolls successfully in health care insurance, to reducing unintended pregnancies, increasing access to affordable, high-quality early child care and education, building on what we've started with the PEEPS program.
Gotta go.
So there's a lot of things going on that are really, really important, and this is, I think, getting at the root causes of what makes our community safer and stronger.
Thank you, David Higuera. Thanks a lot, David.
All right. Thanks, Bill.
All right. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. Have a good day.